this December 7th through 9th. Check out the EdUp Experience podcast live and in person in Doha, Qatar for the World Innovation Summit on Education. We will be documenting the ideas and innovations from today's most influential global education leaders. Check them out at wise-qatar.org and follow the EdUp Experience podcast for more information.
Yay!
The Alliance for Innovation and Transformation is an alliance of pacesetters, forward-thinking higher education CEOs committed to leading by example to show other higher education institutions how to innovate and transform their organizations in the face of unprecedented challenge and change. They offer learning, development, and networking opportunities focused on customer-driven value, innovation, transformation skills, and techniques, and approaches to help colleges and other organizations achieve the long-term sustainability necessary for their survival. AFITHigherEd.com is where you can check them out. AFITHigherEd.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you again on another EdUp episode. We've done so many of these. We're in the mid, I don't know if it's the mid, but turning into the mid 300s very, very quickly. I will tell the audience that I'm very, very proud to say, and not without your support, because your support is the number one thing that allows us to even do this podcast. We just surpassed yesterday. Well, you won't know what day it is when this episode comes out. That's irrelevant. But as we're recording this, we passed 80,000 downloads of the EdUp Experience podcast for our 300 plus episodes, which is insane to us because literally we ended 2020 with 11,000 downloads. That means in the last nine, almost 10 months, we've had 70,000 downloads of our episodes. The EdUp Experience is, of course, continuing to grow quickly. We could not do it without you. We thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts for you to listen to my ranting, Elvin and his shenanigans behind the scenes, but we so much appreciate you. And now we're in this kind of this guest hosting thing where, you know, Liz took a step back and I said, well, who the heck am I going to co-host with? And all of a sudden, this one name, I've had several people come on, but this one name pops out to me, and it's somebody I needed to bring on this podcast. First of all, for a couple of reasons. Number one, she absolutely crushed it on her episode of the EdUp Experience, which continues to manage to get some of those 80,000 downloads today. But secondly, because she absolutely just begged me for collaboration. She said, Joe, will you please collaborate with me more? And I said, I will. I will capitulate. I will collaborate with you as much as you want. And here she is, ladies and gentlemen. She's the managing director of sales at FedEx office, Lisa Honecker. How are you?
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm outstanding. Now, I'm wondering, did you get that order of events right? Was I the one asking for the collabing or was it you? I'm not sure.
It was, I don't know if you hear these sound effects that I have. I think that was automatic. I didn't even hit a button. But every time you say something, Lisa, that's what's going to happen. And I forgot to do this. Let me try it one more time before I bring in our guest. And ladies and gentlemen, here we have Lisa Honecker. You get the applause. So you did get the applause.
See, this is what happens when your EdUp Experience goes viral. You get new tools in your toolbox to continue that trajectory.
Yeah, and this is what happens when you give an amateur tools that he doesn't know how to work with. I just start hitting buttons randomly. There was one guest, Lisa, I had this hooked up, and I introduced him. And I said, and my guest today is so-and-so, and I hit the laugh button.
Oh,
it was great. I didn't do that for you today.
Thank you. Small wins.
Well, we'll start with those wins. And I will tell you that one person who is winning continuously as of late is our guest today. She is running an organization called Campus Works. Her name is Liz Murphy, and she is CEO and chairperson of the board at Campus Works. Liz, welcome to the EdUp Experience.
Thank you so much, Joe and Lisa. I am delighted to be here. Very excited.
Well, we're happy to have you. Very excited to talk about the work that you are doing, which you haven't, I'm guessing, and we had Kevin, one of your colleagues on recently. You guys haven't been short of business lately with the number of institutions that are changing models and looking at efficiency and working through coronavirus. Can you talk about CampusWorks just a little bit, Liz? For those that haven't heard about CampusWorks, what do you do? How do you do it? And how's business?
So what do? Our mission and vision is to help faculty, staff, and students thrive. And that was in place long before the pandemic. So you can only imagine the great challenge that is for us right now as we see beleaguered colleagues, right, on campuses or working through Zoom, trying to make the student experience a knock your socks off experience, right? So what we are is a consultancy, a professional services organization exclusively devoted to higher education. And we help institutions get unstuck. We help institutions transform. We help institutions how to figure out how to unstick the cold spaghetti and really move forward. And right now we're all pretty challenged to make that happen faster, less expensively, and more comprehensively than ever. So yes, we are very busy and thrilled to be so.
I will pass it to you, Lisa, in just a second, but I want to ask you, Liz, and pull on that whole jumbled spaghetti that you talked about. Higher ed is, as you know, been in a place of change recently over the last eight, let's call it during coronavirus, as we were forced, or I always say it was either by choice or by force, to change models, to look at online, to look at alternative delivery, student services, wraparound services, so on. And I think about that change, and there's this assumption. Maybe it's my assumption, but I think there's a general assumption that institutions just kind of went and did the change and now it's going great. But that change happens so fast, it can be very confusing for institutions on how to embed it into their strategic plan now that they're moving forward. Whether, you know, online learning was something that was a complement or it's going to be a supplement for the way they deliver education. There has to be kind of post-innovation spaghetti untangling, as it were, as they look forward to the future post-coronavirus. So I think there might be an assumption that it's like the institution is all confused on what they want to do, but some of that confusion can come from innovation when you weren't planning for it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually think that the advent of the coronavirus brought out the best in higher education in all of North America, quite frankly. I saw organizations coming together so quickly and so comprehensively. Everybody in the organization pulled on the same thread, and that thread was about empowering the student and delivering an exceptional student experience, whether it was counseling services, advising services, instruction. It didn't matter what it was. Everybody put aside their personal and political agendas and said, you know what? We have 2 to 3 weeks to figure out how to do this across the airwaves and through video at most institutions, but not all. Some of them, it was just on phone. In order to make sure that the learning continued. And we saw a response that was just unbelievable. What's happened now is that folks are saying, okay, are we going to get back to normal? Are we going to be able to go back to the way that it was? And I'm really tired, so can I go back to the way it was? And back to the way it was is not going to work anymore in higher ed. And it wasn't really working beautifully prior to the pandemic. We had funding challenges. We had questions of, you know, the ROI of a degree, right? Students weren't sure that it was worth what they were going to spend to get an education. The alignment between what we needed in the workforce and what we were training people for was not necessarily clear, right? So we saw some of those challenges pre-pandemic. Then we hit the pandemic and we see the momentum just completely take off in institutions as they just, boom, make change happen. It was awesome.
Right.
Now we're sort of settling into whatever is this new way of being. I'm not even going to call it a new normal because I don't think there's anything normal about it. And institutions are saying, what can we do better? What is it we're going to keep? What do we have to change about what we put in place in an emergency? What are going to be the sustainable innovations that are going to take us through the 21st century? And so there's a lot of incredible dialogue going on right now in institutions about all of those things. There's also a lot of, you know, there's post-traumatic stress going on.
Oh, totally. You are right on. So much of it, right?
Yeah, very much. And it's personal and professional. I mean, we forget sometimes the trauma that so many families have been through during this time while we've all tried to keep working, right? And things have just moved along, right? So we have both personal and professional stressors that we really haven't had the chance to unpack and work through because we've had to keep going and keep adapting. I just finished a call right before this episode started recording with a president who said, well, my governor's mandate has turned my institution upside down. We are running in every direction, trying to figure out how do we make it a reality. So we'd like to think that the demands of the coronavirus have been set aside. I would love to think we're done with that. Can we just be done? But there are still demands and stressors and new requirements coming to these institutions, and they've got to figure out how do they deal with those at the same time they build a sustainable framework to get them through the rest of the century. And there's lots of challenges to doing that.
Yeah, you know, you said something like, you know, change, transformation, going back to normal. Somebody that I know that knows and has discussed this topic is my co-host, Lisa Honecker, because I did we did a presentation together, Lisa, about how going back to normal, whatever that looks like, is really impossible. Whether you want it, even if you want to go back to normal, you can't. We've evolved. You can't unsee things as you've seen them, Lisa. And so I want to pass it over to you.
Yeah, you know what, Joe? I think if we all remember, COVID was only supposed to be 2 weeks. Remember that?
I do.
Yeah. And then it was maybe until July. And here we are. And I guess by best case scenario, it'll be 2 full years. Within COVID, because I think that we would all agree we have to get through the kind of December, January timeframe. And Liz, one of the things that you said struck me, and it did go back to an episode that Joe and I had, where the agility that we saw in higher education was not awesome in the fun. Ooh, that's so awesome. But in awesome.
Not awesome is an academic term, by the way.
Right. There you go. Thank you. So it really was fantastic to see because historically institutions of higher education tend to be very slow to move, if at all. They tend to look inward and not outward. And those two elements were exactly the opposite of what we've seen within COVID for sure. So what are some of the kind of key standouts in that area that you've seen in your client base?
Where I see institutions really being able to turn the corner goes back to something you just said, Lisa, which is turning to the voice of the customer. I know customer can be a dirty word in higher ed, but I chose it specifically because it really is who are you serving? And at any given time, it could be a faculty member, a fellow staff member, a student, a parent, a business in your community. So when I use the word customer, I want folks to think about who are they serving in the moment. And what we've spent more time doing as an educational entity, the academy spent way more time listening to the voice of the customer, whichever customer that is. And institutions that are doing that are learning a lot. They're finding out that students really didn't want to drive to campus in order to turn in a form or to stand in line and wait for somebody to authorize their financial aid, right? They never wanted to do that. And when the pandemic put us all in a situation where they couldn't do that and you had to find another way to service them, you became incredibly creative. So how do we keep listening? Students were saying that before. look, this is really not convenient. This is really not 21st century. But we were slow to respond because we had lots of reasons to be slow to respond. And then when we had to change, we just did. We just did it. The other thing I'm seeing really happening at institutions that have sort of grabbed the bull by the horns and said, change is happening, I better be on this bull as it crosses the finish line, are I care a lot about the value proposition I'm making for education. I care about connecting the dots for my prospective student and his or her parent about why this investment is a good investment, or why this local business should hire our institution to provide the workforce development training. I'm not just assuming that I'm the only game in town, because the other thing that happened during the pandemic is everybody is a competitor. And we've been preparing clients in our strategic planning work to really appreciate that long before the pandemic. But the coronavirus put a real firm point on it to say, I can go to class anywhere. I can be anywhere. I can take courses from anywhere and from anyone. So now my commitment to my community college is sort of waning maybe a little bit, because I don't have to just go where I can get to after work or after my part-time job kind of situation. So folks who really see competition much more broadly and more contemporary are responding better to the fallout, I guess I would say, in this new environment.
I love that, Liz. And to what degree would you place on this very significant transformation? And I know transformation and campus works go hand in hand, but like, what percentage of your potential client base did you see as leaning into this pre-COVID? And where would you estimate that population is now?
Oh, great question.
Hard question. Thank you, Lisa, for being the hard question person on this episode so far.
Yeah, so I think there was so much desire to transform before. And now, you know, I'm not being provocative just to be provocative, but the truth was, presidents had to think a lot about, can I really afford to take this path toward transformation, or am I going to have organizational upheaval when I go about doing it? There are a couple of networking organizations that I spend time with college presidents, right? And they've kind of gotten to the point where they see as a badge of honor votes of no confidence, right? Because they were coming after presidents were very brave and took actions that were really about the long-term sustainability of the institution, but really pushed the institution to look at itself very differently and to behave very differently. And that's a very scary thing for an academy that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Now, what we see happening is that there's a much greater acceptance to the fact that the same way, old way of doing things is not going to be sustainable. And we are not going to be able to survive, let alone thrive as institutions, unless we make some change. It's still very scary. So I would say there was a desire on leadership's part to transform, but a small percentage, maybe a quarter of the institutions, had the leadership that was willing to take the big chance and move in that direction. And now post-pandemic, even mid-pandemic, you see a greater number, close to 70% of leadership saying, we have no choice. And what's really cool is you can see the boards that govern these institutions getting on board with that too, like really understanding why it's time to make tough decisions. One of the things we do is we do spend a bunch of time with boards, with our clients, helping them to understand what's happening in the environment, that it's not just happening in their region. It's not just happening with their alumni. It's happening nationally. And what that means from a competitive positioning for the institution, so that the boards have the courage to stand up also and say, yes, let's just keep pushing the transformation agenda. not just for the sake of pushing the agenda, but to be responsive to what students and the workforce needs right now. And that's going to be key to really making a difference and doing what I think community colleges have always done expertly, which is keeping America working. That's their core, right? And what better time to make sure that they're in a position to do that than now?
Well said. And, you know, so much of the work that you do, as I look through your list of services, and it makes me think, you know, when you go back to what Lisa was saying about transformation, what does that mean? And I think it, you know, it means so many different things to different people. Are there schools that are going, hey, look, transformation for us, we did it. It's kind of post coronavirus. We need to get by this. This is what we need right now, is to get our students back or get beyond, you know, the disruption of a pandemic. And then we'll think about the next 3 to 5 years. Or are the institutions kind of doubling down and saying, okay, we've got this opportunity to reimagine the entire way we do business. Whether coronavirus is here or not doesn't matter. We're preparing for the future. What's the general outlook approach for when an institution goes into this process with you at Campus Works? What, no matter what it is, no matter what area they're looking at, how do they approach it? Is it kind of like coronavirus at the end of coronavirus, then we'll think about it? Or is it 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
It is all about beginning where you are right now, because transformation, look, I can feel transformed when I take off that pesky 8 pounds that's been bothering me, right? And then when I go back into my closet, I can wear anything, everything fits, instead of this, oh my gosh, I gotta travel and I've gotta try everything on to make sure it fits me, right? Before I go out. So transformation could be an 8 pound weight loss or an 80 pound weight loss. You gotta begin where you are, and there's no time like the present. So when we say we help people catch up and get ahead, sometimes they have really basic fundamental work like business process redesign, looking at your business processes. Lots of people are doing this right now. They're looking at the business processes as they exist today, and they're saying, wow, these didn't really hold up well from a distance, right? How can we reimagine these to be more service oriented, more aligned to the student experience that our students are saying they want, and more efficient and effective for our staff? So that's usually a going in place, no matter where you are, whether you have big innovative ideas or you're just trying to catch up and get a new strong foundation. Business process reimagine and redesign is a great place to start. We're seeing a lot of leading transformational ideas come up in strategic plans right now, right? So there's some catching up to do in institutional strategic plans, but there are also some really bold ideas that are coming out in the strategic planning process. There's also a realignment of the technology infrastructures at institutions, right? So really figuring out, do I really have the right tools, the right talent, the right structure in order to support the growth of this institution and the agility that's so necessary for the institution? The other place we've been providing surprisingly a lot of guidance is in interim staffing and staff augmentation. As you all know, I mean, I don't know about all of you, but where I live, sometimes I'm on my fourth restaurant before it's actually open and I can have a meal, right?
Yeah, or they have enough staff to even serve you.
Exactly, exactly. And we're seeing it not just in the hospitality area, but everywhere. I was just having a conversation with some other presidents about that the other day. They're experiencing a great number more vacancies at their institutions than they ever have. So they need staff members who can come in and hit the ground running. So we're doing that. We're providing that for institutions. And we're also providing interim staffing when you have some sort of gnarly changes that need to be made and you kind of don't want to wear out the new person, right? So our folks are very, very experienced, decades of experience in higher ed. And so they come in, they take on the really gnarly challenges, they get you to sort of an even keel, make sure the staff is all well taken care of, right? They're well trained, the structure's spot on. That way, it's much more appealing for you to hire someone who walks into a situation that's all buttoned up, right? Now they can be creative and innovative as opposed to putting fires out the entire time they're there. So those are a number of the things we see folks buying into now. And one of the ways we're helping is our board of directors made a gift of $500,000 this year. $500,000 to provide transformational grants to institutions of higher education. Wow. So if you need a little boost to get process reimagine or redesign done, if you have a creative idea that you'd like to explore, but you don't have any funding for it, if you're thinking about joining some other institutions in a shared services environment, we've got grants to help you to do that. And we could think of no better way to give back to the community after such a traumatic time than that.
It's no secret that there are considerable challenges facing higher education right now. The teaching and learning methods of the past are becoming obsolete, and time-worn processes have all but lost their effectiveness. No longer will the take no action or move forward with incremental change mindsets sustain operations. Colleges are closing their doors at an alarming rate, and some are teetering on the edge of existence. It's time to join the Alliance for Innovation and Transformation, better known as AFIT. Check them out at afithighered.com. That's AFIT highered.com. If you want to be at the forefront of technology and innovation in education, it's time to look at AFIT.
That's amazing. And Lisa, I do want to pass it to you, because that part about talent, finding talent, and you know, a big organization like FedEx Office, I'm sure you're kind of in that same conversation. But before I do, Liz, this is the episode where we call it, we got to keep the guest on their feet here. We like to surprise you, maybe a couple of curveballs here and there. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Liz, this is for $1 billion. Your question, we want to learn a little bit about you, and that is this. The question is, what music would be playing over the loudspeaker? That kind of makes me feel old when I said it that way. On your portable music device you'd be carrying around with you as you walk into a room at the CampusWorks offices, even virtually. What's your entrance music, Liz?
Journey.
Journey. Any song in particular?
Oh gosh, I'm just a maniac. It's how I start almost every day. So Journey or the fireworks song by Katy Perry.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Those are absolutely.
All right, so we're kicking tires and lighting fires then, as Liz is on her
way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like to my husband's a big a folk music kind of guy, or what I call the Wailing Betties, you know, women who really sound like it's very slow. And I can't do it. I love everything about him except his choice of music.
Love it. This is awesome. All right, Lisa, not to leave you out, and then I'm going to let you take back over the episode here. You also have a question. Are you ready?
I'm terrified, Joe. Okay, well, Liz's question.
Yours is harder. Here we go. Let's not fail, Lisa. Let's not fail. Your question is one of opinion, also for $1 billion. What is the most overused un word in education? Is it unpack, unprecedented, unbundle, or an un word that I'm not mentioning?
Oh, it's unprecedented.
That
is the most overused in the last 24 months, period, anywhere, ever.
Do you currently use that word, Lisa?
Negative. No. Yeah.
I think you're right. Unprecedented, because we use it to describe all the things that were happening around us, and still some people do. And it's like, okay, wait a minute. It's not that unprecedented. It's like you just needed to change and something nudged you into the right direction. And that's not really unprecedented, right?
No. And at this point, to everything that we've been talking about, this is now life. There is no going back. This is life, and we're navigating it. And yes, move on.
All right. Well, there you go. There's your billion-dollar question.
I have a suggestion for Lisa, and I think she should do one of those calm meditation segments, and that should be it. this is life and we need to get over it. And this is just going to be the way it is. And
I think some of that music in the background.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't have a sound effect for that, but I could get one.
Well, Liz, I have to tell you, one of my first concerts that I ever went to was Journey. And that and Van Halen and Def Leppard.
So nice. Oh, there you go.
Yep. And then my daughter, who is 19 right now, I introduced her to Hair Nation on SiriusXM. The
greatest channel ever created.
No doubt. And guess what her first concert was? Katy Perry.
Oh my gosh, look at that.
So there you go.
Look at that.
There you go. Well, Joe definitely tossed me a question on the war on talent or a segue. And, you know, I would say the war on talent, regardless of the situation where we're in now, that also started before the pandemic. And mm-hmm. finding the best and the brightest and understanding how to retain those individuals, how to grow those individuals so that they kept being engaged in the workplace, whether, again, that was in higher education or it was in the corporate America. All those pieces are important and also are equally important for the student. And when I was doing some research on Campus Works, like that is really a core foundational piece of your consultancy in trying to attract and retain that student population. What are some of those new and creative approaches that you advocate within your client base?
We first try to, so it's interesting that we talk a lot about students and we talk about being student-centric, but I learned a long time ago that if you want to take care of your students, your clients, you first have to take care of your employees. And if you don't take good care of your employees, they're not motivated, energized, incented to take care of the clients. And it's not that it doesn't come naturally, but you know, at this time, we just talked about post-traumatic stress, right? People are exhausted. How do they make the next move? How do they do it again tomorrow? How do they answer that phone or answer that Zoom or stand at that desk one more time and look as if you're the most important person that you've seen today? It's all around culture. So we spend a lot of time with our clients talking about the values, what values they've chosen as an organization. We encourage them to build those values from the ground up, meaning those values should be selected by their faculty, staff, and administrators. They should be geared toward the kind of environment they want to be working in right now. And those values really should drive the culture. And then that culture has to be tended to every single day. As a CEO, your number one job should be tending to that culture. And it's really hard to do that, because everybody wants something else from you, right? And a lot of times culture is at the bottom of the list. But if you don't prioritize that into the top of your list, you're not going to have the people who are going to be loyal and devoted to the point of understanding what's going on around them and really being fully engaged, right? And able to articulate clearly when there are challenges, but also be creative about solutions. So we begin from the bottom up with values. We also get people aligned around the student experience so they can see how their personal values and the student experience they're trying to help to create actually are running in parallel and how powerful that is. So we bring faculty, staff, students, and administrators together to actually craft a student experience statement that, you know, drives where the institution is going to go and creates a shared understanding. One of the things we lost sight of before the pandemic in higher ed, when there was just a lot of tussling going around, as some people could see the need for change and others saw that there really was no need for change, was we started to make it more personal and we forgot why we were all there to begin with. And when you go to walk into any institution, what you find everybody has in common is this absolute devotion to the students and ultimately to improving their quality of life. And when you start to have a conversation about that, now I'm really pumped about coming to work because I see what I'm contributing. And if I have a good leader who is nurturing the culture, a culture that I helped to create as an employee, now, even when somebody jingles me with a little bit of a salary increase, I'm thinking about what I'm giving up in terms of quality of life because of how you work in the environment that you're in, who you work with, et cetera. As you know, Lisa, probably from your work, that people typically don't leave for money. They say they do, but that's not really why they leave. If they're having an awesome experience, they're staying engaged. And when people feel like they're making a contribution and making a real difference, that's when you have a committed workforce. It's a lot of people on the move right now. Some are settling into new geographies because they have that choice. The decision of whether or not to require everyone to come back to campus is a real tipping point for some institutions because there are other opportunities to not come to campus every day. And if you're in an environment where commuting is brutal, it really is a benefit to not have to make that trek in and out of the office every single day. And does it help with productivity? So leadership really needs to think about the advantages of benefits that are different than the traditional benefits and how that plays in their workforce as well.
There is a ton to unpack. That was another on one.
Ooh, and on.
In that, and definitely things that everybody is facing right now, decisions that everybody is facing. So to your point, a lot of people have moved and they've moved to those mid-market cities where maybe the quality of life is better. Maybe they're closer to kids or grandkids so that when the time is right, they can segue into that. And whether, again, you're in higher education or you're in corporate America, finding an organization that is going to facilitate that quality of life is going to move all the way up to the top one, two, or three of the choices. And yes, Liz, I definitely agree. People don't really leave for money. It's sort of like in my world in sales, people will always justify something on price, but the real answer is something like, I want to be respected, or I want to be seen as powerful, or I want recognition. It's one of these emotional drivers that drives the decision, but then they justify it on price all day, every day. So I hear you on that. And the last thing that I wanted to just add in your description there is what you described when you kind of change that charter to be values-based is how do you pull discretionary effort out of people? And I think that what we saw in higher education during especially the height of the pandemic is that discretionary effort come out of anybody and everybody, but that agility that we talked about at the beginning, that was a direct byproduct of that discretionary effort. Everybody from administration to faculty to that teaching assistant that wanted to make sure that that one kid that couldn't get Wi-Fi in, you know, very rural Kentucky, that that TA went the extra mile to make sure that that kid's learning did not fall off track.
We had team members who lived adjacent to some of our clients who actually drove laptops to students' homes so that they would have what they needed, right? We were helping the institutions out. And I mean, people were really going the extra mile. You're absolutely right. And I like that discretionary word too, right? Because it is a choice. You have a choice about how you're going to use it. And we really saw people using it to amp up the experience. The student experience, which is really cool.
Yep.
Well, I want to, Lisa, I'm going to jump in just to stay relevant. You guys are doing so good with each other. I figure I got to jump in and try to be part of the episode here, or else, Lisa, you're going to monopolize the podcast. But you're asking really good questions. I hope to have one of my own here. And that is, Liz, is you guys are talking about workforce, you're talking about technology, we're talking about transformation. And I look through this list of services that you guys have, and I'm wondering how you do any of them individually without the others. Right.
Oh, that's a great question.
Right. Like, I want to do some, cybersecurity work, and somebody hires you to look at cybersecurity. It's like, well, how do you do, is that even a question? How do you do cybersecurity without business process optimization? How do you do business process optimization without assessments or accreditation? Does anybody come into this thinking they can one off those types of items without looking at the entire process?
Actually, most of our clients put a toe in the water, right? And then they sort of wade into the pool all the way. And if you could see me, I have a big grin on my face, because it can be really overwhelming. We have a philosophy and a series of methodologies that are designed to help you as much as you want to be aided by us, but also to do really terrific knowledge transfer and teaching so you can carry forward, right? One of the things that being an organization that just serves higher ed, we have to respect that there is not, these wallets are not burgeoning. Now, right now they actually are with all the stimulus money, but that's going to go away at some point, right? And so, and in the not too distant future. So our model was really built in a fairly counterintuitive way if you're a business person. And it says, we're going to set you up in such a way that we're either going to give you a roadmap to do the work to get you to the next step, or we're going to take you as far as you want to go. But whatever we do, we're going to leave you with the knowledge, skills, and abilities to go to the next step. Now, I will say we have awesome customers and they tend to stay with us for a very, very long time. And sometimes they're doing a little bit of work with us and sometimes they're doing a whole lot of work with us. And it really depends on what talent they have on board at any given time, right? So again, we're back to, we meet them where they are. What are their priorities or what are their challenges? We have some clients right now, it seems like financial aid is a real hot button right now. And just sort of relooking, and I think it was the advent of all the influx of dollars coming from the federal government, HERF funding and other things, right, to support students, really shone a light on some things that weren't working well at some institutions. So we're performing as interim financial aid director, and in the process, we're doing business process redesign, and we're teaching the staff that's there how to meet the demands, what the new compliance requirements are, right? And that's how you kind of pull the thread. But meeting people where they are and then giving them the tools and the roadmap they need is really how it works in reality, right?
Yeah.
What stops people sometimes is they look at the entirety of what they're trying to solve, and that paralyzes them to be able to move forward. So you may recall,
it's overwhelming, like change is overwhelming,
exactly.
And I don't want to do it.
Exactly. And they get stuck and they're like just stuck there. They can't move. And so we break it down and say, okay, this is the order you have to do things in, and let's get started, and then it doesn't seem so scary when they start to see progress. Then they really get, there's a lot of momentum that gets created.
I love that answer, because it's, anybody that's ever used an outside perspective in a consultancy, it's hard to one-off these things because all of your systems are so tangled, right?
Yeah.
And it's even harder for the consultancy to come in and only go, okay, look, we've helped you with your IT leadership, but you're going to have to work on the staff augmentation and the strategic planning. But, if you want us back, let us know. It's like, how do you just like burn the cord and stop it? It's so intertwined. And I encourage anybody who's thinking about process redesign, thinking about innovating and or getting unstuck to contact Liz at campusworksinc.com. You can go there, you can check it out. There's a list of all the services that they have. It's a really incredible organization. There's nothing but great things. I know a lot of people in higher ed have never heard anything other than 100% positive feedback about CampusWorks and the people that have worked with you, Liz, and for you for that matter. So that's a testament to what you guys have going on. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. The other thing I'd offer is if you want to talk to anybody on our team about how to create a really dynamic organizational culture, it's one of the things we're proud that we figured out. Great Place to Work has honored us as a top 50 consulting firm, 100 Great Places to Work. Fortune just honored us. And what we're going to tell you is that it was built by our team, right? It's not something you can start at the top and just push down. But we love having conversations with organizations and sharing ideas. And that's not on the clock. That's just being good colleagues, right? And sharing, because there's nothing more important right now than building a really strong organization that'll take you forward.
Love that. Well, Lisa, let me pass it back to you. Ask any final questions of Liz before I give her the final two questions of the episode.
Are they going to be scary quiz questions with
no,
walk-up
no.
music?
No, okay. We've done the damage already on that.
Okay. So Liz, I was actually just going to bounce back to something that you and Joe were talking about sometimes when you talk about business process changes, transformation, optimization, fill in third word here, that can be very overwhelming to anybody, any executive looking to undertake that. But what I would offer to our listeners, your clients, both current and prospective, is number one, the key hurdle that happens when you look at BPO oftentimes is culture and change management and unwillingness to be agile or think differently. And again, when we look at the pandemic, that is something that has been, if not fully erased, definitely mitigated. So as organizations, as higher education institutions are looking to transform, now is the time because that big high hurdle is down. So that is definitely a key takeaway.
I like key takeaways. Liz, we've got two more questions for you. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Lisa, these are Lisa's questions. They are more in the hard category. Actually, the first one's mine. The second one's hers. The first one is what did we miss about CampusWorks today? Maybe something, you know, Lisa, this is my first time. She's my co-host here. Maybe it's something she forgot to ask you. I mean, because if we forgot to ask you something, it was certainly Lisa that forgot to ask it. Is there something about CampusWorks that we didn't ask? Anything that you want to say, plug, initiative you have going on, anything at all? What did we miss? And number two, that was my question. Number two, what does the future of higher education look like? That one's from Lisa.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
I know she brings the really hard ones.
Yeah. And you at the very end. So I would say I do want to put another plug in for the grants. $500,000 to higher education. You do not have to be a CampusWorks customer to be selected. So please go to the CampusWorks website and check that out. If you have any inkling about a little transformation or a big one that you want to make, I think it's worth it. Other things about CampusWorks, I would say we are truly blessed to have some of the most spectacular professionals in higher ed on the team. That's what makes it just a really cool place to work. And these people get you. They get what you're going through. I like to say we hire the people who've been run over a couple times because you know what? You don't need somebody coming in and telling you, you know, oh, don't worry, it's going to be okay. Just use this form. Just use this template. No, our folks will say, oh yeah, been there, done that. Had the DOE audit. Let me tell you how we overcame that. Let me tell you what this is, right? They will hear you. They're highly empathetic. They will hear you. They will understand you. And they will give you a path toward moving forward. And nothing feels better than that. As for the future of higher ed, I've never been more optimistic about the possibility of transforming this remarkable structure that we have to educate people. We're going to need really strong leadership to do it. Very brave, willing to take the punches when we do things that are unpopular. We're going to be need very well educated boards who understand how to connect the dots and appreciate the leadership challenge that's out there. We're going to need people who are looking at the leadership roles in higher ed right now saying, who would want to do that job? Stepping up to do the job so that our best and brightest are taking our institutions forward. Because at the end of the day, what we do in higher ed is just, it's amazing. We are changing people's lives forever, no matter what our role is. Advising, counseling, teaching, consulting to people who do that, whatever it is, we are making a ripple in the world that is measurable. And the way we're going to do that is by being willing to get unstuck and look at things a little differently. And the best way to do that is to listen to the voice of our customers. They'll tell us what they need. And we have shown that we have the power and the agility and the will to make the change that's necessary.
I hate waiting till the end of the episode to give my mic drop moment, but that was so good, Liz, that you said that. It is the work that we do in higher education is just absolutely incredible. We need to be proud of it. And we do need to transform along the way. We do have to remember that we evolve. Back to your point about customer, the customer evolves, how we offer product evolves, all of that has to evolve. And there are great people to help you do that along the way. I do want to mention that this episode, I didn't mention at the beginning, but I'm going to go back and do it later, is brought to you by the Alliance for Innovation and Transformation, better known as AFIT. And you can check them out at afithighered.com. CampusWorks, Liz, you and CampusWorks are a member of AFIT, is that correct?
We are.
There's about 50 CEOs, college and presidents all together. Innovating together, deciding what the future looks like. It's a organization you should check out. And I want to thank you first, Lisa Honecker. I call you the Honecker. I don't even call you by first name anymore. The Honecker is with me. You've done an incredible job. I want to thank you by giving you your new sound effect every time you come on from now on. The air horn, Lisa, that's for you.
Thank you oh so much.
To our guest today, Liz Murphy, CEO, chairperson of the board at CampusWorks. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. You're an incredible, incredible person and leader, and it's been a pleasure to have you.
It's been a real delight to be with the two of you too. Thanks for doing what you do. The talk about making a ripple effect, you guys have done it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of the EdUp Experience podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just EdUpped.
The Alliance for Innovation and Transformation is an alliance of pacesetters, forward-thinking higher education CEOs committed to leading by example to show other higher education institutions how to innovate and transform their organizations in the face of unprecedented challenge and change. They offer learning, development, and networking opportunities focused on customer-driven value, innovation, transformation skills, and techniques, and approaches to help colleges and other organizations achieve the long-term sustainability necessary for their survival. AFITHigherEd.com is where you can check them out. AFIT HigherEd.com.